Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds.
Special themed episode.
It's our Turner Classic Movies Film Festival episode.
Normally with Alan Havey, but not this time.
No, couldn't go this year. I was too busy running around being a big shot actor.
Yeah.
Look at this guy. So we've got our resident writer, Neil T. Weekly, is in the house.
Why, hello.
He's obviously been doing some voiceover cartoon work.
You know, I was going to ask, what happened to Coffee and Jam Jam? Haven't heard from them in a while. Were they kidnapped? What happened to
Wow,
them?
That's a throwback.
It is.
You haven't had Coffee and Jam Jam on the show in about 6 years.
Wow, has it been that
long? It's been long, maybe five, six years.
That's terrible.
Coffee and Jam Jam in the mornings. Yeah, that was our morning team of Coffee and Jam Jam.
I love Coffee and Jam Jam.
Oh, so, mornings.
Speaking of the morning, what did you wake up on today?
Oh, buddy, I woke
our
up.
Our sponsor?
I woke up right. I slept on our sponsor.
Ooh.
Whoa. That's, hey, however you get checks, Neil. All right, we got to keep this lights on.
That's good points. Sure thing. That's a sponsor I could use.
Casper mattresses. I've now had this mattress for over a year. Love it. It is memory foam, and I've never.
It's a mix of like latex foam and memory foam, two technologies together, like chocolate and peanut butter.
Oh,
it's like sleeping on a Reese's peanut butter cup.
It's amazing, which is the greatest candy bar ever invented. So
sweet sleep.
Don't sleep on like a payday.
Yeah. Or a,
nothing with almonds. It just falls all lumpy.
Yeah.
It's just all lumpy.
This is what you want to sleep on.
And really, who likes coconut? Really?
Yeah, come on.
People say they like coconut.
Yeah.
They don't really like coconut.
Like when you're trick-or-treating.
I know you like the water.
What do you want more than a Reese's? Nothing.
But coconut itself? No, you don't want to be sleeping on coconut.
Sleep on peanut butter and chocolate, folks. Get yourself a Casper mattress. I love this mattress. It is, as I've said before, when I'm on the road, I have such sleep issues. Now, some of it is time change and stuff like that, but a lot of it is different, all these different hotel beds. Mm-hmm. You have about a 25-30% chance of it being a nice mattress on a hotel. I don't care how nice. And let the really nice hotels have them.
Yeah.
But your just average hotel chains are just sort of okay.
They're not going to be in the condo.
No.
The comedy condo.
Oh, God, I won't stay in those anymore. I can't do that. But these mattresses are amazing, and I come home off the road, and I'm always just a little fried from all the not sleeping thing, and the first night home is so great.
And it's such a great price. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king. And I think it's $850 for a queen.
$850 for a queen, but wait a minute.
No, we're not going to let you pay full price. That's crazy.
Chris, how do I not pay full price?
Well, first of all, I would go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and then use comedyfilmnerds as a promo code. Get $50 off.
So you're telling me I can get a king-size mattress for $900 now?
You sure can, and no risk. 100-day free trial.
That's the best thing about it. And I'll be honest with you, the first, and it says in the package.
Excuse me, not a free trial.
A trial.
You got to buy it first.
You got to buy it.
Yeah, then, you get free delivery.
And then if you don't like it within 100 days, send it back. You don't have to pay the shipping.
Painless return.
I'll be honest with you, and they said, when they sent it to me, the first, you know, it takes a week or two to get in to feel comfortable with it.
Right.
And they were right.
Because it has to open up and suck out all the oxygen in the room. Right? Doesn't it like, doesn't it come like in a tube?
That sure makes it easy to sleep. Yeah.
Isn't that, didn't you say it came in like
a
weird
some
package?
Sci-fi alien plant. What are you talking about? It just has to unwrap, suck all the oxygen in the room? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, that's just what my mattress did.
That's
going to
be the next alien film, yeah, I think.
The mattress
after
awakening.
Alien Covenant will be, yeah. Right.
No, just has to unfold, Chris. And
okay,
then, and then
got it.
It does take it. It takes you a couple weeks. At least it took me to sort of get used to it, and then for the mattress to sort of break in. So the 100-day thing is a good deal. So you can, if you're not comfortable, ship it back and then get a new one.
Comedy Film Nerds is your code. Remember, Casper.com/comedyfilmnerds. Comedy Film Nerds promo code gets you $50 off.
That's like you guys saying, "Hey, I'm going to give you $50.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm giving you $50.
Sweet. And a good night's sleep.
And a good night's sleep.
Wow. Which really is worth more than $50.
And suck all the oxygen out of the room.
Suck the oxygen out of the room, yes. With my bike shoes. With your bike shoes.
Well, that's a callback to an episode from like a month and a half ago. That's great. Since we're doing coffee and jam, we might as well bring them all back. Kitten sure, hands, what else definitely. Have we got?
Yeah, I bring the kitten hands back every time.
Hello, I'm from China. Yeah. We'll bring them all back. We'll dust off all the old riffs.
All the gems. So now, Neil.
Speaking of gems.
Let's talk about this festival that is amazing every year. Alan swears by it. You got to go how many years now?
Let's see. I went one the first year because Alan had an extra ticket.
Yes.
Then I went with him as press. Then one year we couldn't for some reason. Something happened.
Right.
And then this year. So I've been 3 or 4 years, three of which, I've seen as much as possible.
Now, what did you see this year?
Yeah, tell us about it.
Oh, dear Lord. That's...
Come on now. They're all... I mean, I'm looking through the program right
now.
It's
amazing.
And it's just,
it is amazing. And let's see. Well, Thursday, I would like to have seen the opening, but it's invite only. They did All the President's Men and Q&A with, the actual... The only one of the two guys still living.
Really?
The journalists, yeah. So that apparently, I heard it was
Woodward,
amazing.
Bob Woodward, right?
Woodward and Bernstein was there. Yeah, Bernstein's still alive.
Bernstein's still alive, wow.
Yeah, I believe so. So that was supposedly really amazing. I kind of wish I'd seen that. But no such luck. On Friday, let's go back. Let's go to Friday. I need to see Friday because there was so much. I saw so much on Friday and Saturday. That I did the book signing. The first thing I did on Friday, because I had to get my pass in the morning, I had to get there at 10 to pick up your pass. So 11.
And I heard you got recognized, which was awesome.
Yeah, one of the people at the info desk. So yeah, I go into the Roosevelt. That's where the Roosevelt Hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. You go in to the right, and there's the info desk, and I was like, just to double check, make sure where was. The place to pick up the press room, and usually it was upstairs, and I went upstairs, and of course the two guys, the big security, were like, "Oh, it's downstairs at the front desk." Okay, so I went downstairs, and it's not where it was, but when I went to the front desk downstairs, the info desk, there was a girl who was like, "Oh yeah, hi, oh hey, oh yeah, you're Neil, I recognize you, I listen to Comedy Film Nerds every week."
So, great.
So we had a fan right there at the info desk. So I went upstairs and got my pass and the swag bag with like a bottle of wine and all sorts of awesome stuff in
That's
it.
That's great.
And so the first thing I decided to do at 11 a.m. was Ileana Douglas was going to sign her book, and CJ was on a few weeks ago randomly plugging it. So I was like, "That's awesome. Ileana, she's going to be here twice." I said, "I'm going to buy her book."
Right.
And I had her sign it. So I had her sign it. That was awesome. And, did the fan thing, got a picture taken and everything. She was very nice. Mm-hmm. And just started the book, and it's really funny.
Oh, cool.
And the book is called I Blame Dennis Hopper. And it's just about her. When her parents saw Easy Rider, they decided to become hippies. And that's like, that is actually what happened. Her dad just became Dennis Hopper. And
wow.
And the first chapter is hilarious. It's just about how he was, he had an office job. He was had a good job. He had a nice house in Connecticut. They were living the American dream. Mm-hmm. And then he saw Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider, and he started a commune down the hill.
Oh my God!
And then became poor. Like he quit his job.
Like dropped out.
Yeah, right. He totally dropped out, and then they became poor after like 6 months or so, because he just spent all the money on the commune and. Hippies would show up, and it's already an amazing book. It's absolutely hilarious, and it's full of like just anecdotal stories about her and her life and being in film and out of film. And so she's a big fan of film too, so I've only read a couple chapters. Already hilarious. So again, somebody else who can recommend Ileana Douglas's book.
Very cool. So what was the first screening you went to?
So after that I let's see. It was half an hour or so. And I went to see, this was awesome. I've seen the film called The Conversation. Gene Hackman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, Francis Ford Coppola. And Francis Ford Coppola was there doing the Q&A.
Oh,
so we had a conversation with Francis Ford Coppola before the conversation. And that was really cool. And the way the movie came about was he didn't really care much about like mob movies. He didn't care about mob stuff. And so when they came to him and wanted to do The Godfather, he was like, all right, it took some convincing, but he said, yeah, okay. So he made The Godfather, but things like great stories, like nobody wanted Marlon Brando in it.
Right.
He did. He says, I want Marlon Brando. The studio's like, no, what? It's like people like that. He had to convince the studio to put in
Marlon Brando. I love hearing that.
Yeah. Like great stuff like that. And so when they came to him, he said, okay, I'm done. He made that film and he didn't want to do a second. But they said, look, we really want you to do this second Godfather. So he said, well, if you want me to do it, you're going to give me $1 million. And they said, okay, which in 1974 was crazy money for a director. And then he said, and I've got this film I want to make and you can't touch it. It's totally mine and I'll do whatever I want. And they said, okay. And that was the conversation.
Wow.
So not only did he get like a huge payday to do Godfather 2, but he got to do the conversation.
Wow.
They also didn't want, the studio did not want to call it Godfather Part 2 because they thought it would confuse people. They thought it would be the second half of the first one. The first movie, like the studio thought it would be the same. If people thought it would be the same movie, this was just the second half of it. so he had to convince. That was the only thing they had to convince. He had to convince the studio of is calling it Godfather Part 2.
Wow,
which I thought was funny. But The Conversation's a great movie, and I've seen it before, but not on the big screen and with Francis Ford Coppola.
And to see it like with contemporary glasses on, like with everything about surveillance, and
right?
What
all
we know
about the sound tech.
Mm-hmm. John Cazale's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a really haunting final scene too that still resonates.
It does.
I mean, like actually, Harrison Ford's in it. Terry Carr is in it. It'll Cindy
forget.
Williams is in it. Like it's
you forget all these people that were in it. Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford. I totally forgot he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot he was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Robert Duvall mm-hmm. plays his Harrison's boss. Yeah. It's a great film. It's definitely more of a slow burn. It's not a fast-paced film.
It is a slow burn for sure.
But it's
a
powerful.
Slow burn in 74. It was a slow burn when the pacing was a lot different than it is now.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
What else did you see then?
Let's see. After The Conversation, it was a weird day Friday just because everything I wanted to do, there was like a lot of time between each thing because because I figured if I saw something in between some of these mm-hmm. films, I would miss because you have to get in line.
Right.
Oh, right.
And then
it's like Comic-Con.
And then they give you a number.
Right.
And you have to say, oh, how many seats are in that
theater? It's
Comic-Con
for people over 60.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I had to plan my day early. Mm-hmm. Very strangely. So after The Conversation, that was fun.
What did you do?
Make sure that was because I saw The Conversation at 2:15.
Uh-huh.
And then I had oodles of time.
What was your next one you were going to see?
Let's talk about the movies you saw.
I was going to see. Yeah, no, there were so many great films. Like, it's ridiculous. But after that, I literally had time to go get something to eat. And then by the pool, the Roosevelt Pool.
Which they've redone and made it all cool.
It's really nice. And the bar out back, out there and everything, which is really expensive. But but they had the original 1966 Batman the movie with Adam West. And Adam West was there along with Lee Merriweather.
Oh my
god! So they did a conversation with them early on, and of course Adam West was hilarious. He's the hoot, the guy.
So what was it? What were they how did they, looking back now, view that film and that Batman?
Well, they, especially Adam West, who always has defended,
right?
You know, he's almost to a fault in a sense. He's so funny, and he's right. The whole movie is they knew they were playing it for camp.
Of course,
they knew they were playing it over the top.
That was the whole point of the show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's so many. There's so many great guest appearances in the show too. But this was so good because it had literally had the Penguin, Joker, Riddler, and Catwoman. So like they brought in all the big four
right
villains, and Lee Merriweather was like, well, they asked Eartha Kitt, but Eartha Kitt was already committed to do another film, so she went in for auditions and stuff, and she said literally she just started acting like a cat. And they hired her on the spot. So so Lee Merriweather got the Catwoman part. But and of course she was the young actress and all these huge, Burgess Meredith,
right,
mm-hmm. Frank Gorshin,
Cesar Romero.
Cesar mm-hmm. Romero. I was thinking Sid Caesar, that's why.
Mm-hmm. Show of shows.
And so she was, like everybody was just like really great.
Now, are these screenings like packed? Like when you say you have to wait in line, or is yeah. it often where it'll sell out where you can't get in?
A lot of them are like the pool one. I got there early because I had the time in between. I got there early, so I got a nice seat and a mm-hmm. lounge chair, by the mm-hmm. pool, and got a drink and a beer, but by the time the movie started, yeah, it was packed to the gills. I mean, there was people standing in the bar area. They were just standing around because there was no, all the seats were gone.
Wow.
And they had seats way in the back. They even set up chairs. And a lot of these screenings are like that, especially the big ones. Things like All the President's Men, it sold out. Right. That's a packed house at the main Chinese theater, so there's no seats left. And so and they see, like, the key is knowing how many seats there are, and there's around 900 and change in the Chinese theater. So when you get, like, number 600, you're like, I might make it.
Right.
I might get in. Which was my experience on Saturday. You don't know. I mean, you might not. But then there were a couple surprises, too. There were a couple surprises when I, went in. I was like, why is there not more people in here?
Like, what's the screening you thought would be more packed that wasn't?
Well, I saw on Saturday, there was Fat City.
Oh man, that's
John Huston, the boxing movie. John Huston directing, Stacey Keach and Jeff Bridges, like very young Jeff Bridges, 1972. And
this is John Huston was sort of, he had hit a little bit of a slump in terms of his films in the 60s, and this was sort of a little bit of a comeback.
This was after Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, way.
This
out.
Is right before mm-hmm. Chinatown.
So this is like in. So he had the success of like Maltese Falcon and whatever the 40s or 50s, and then in the 60s he had a couple clunkers, man, and then this was like sort of a little bit of a comeback for him.
It's one of those it's an interesting movie. I liked it. I just it's also, if you feel like boxing movies.
Now, had you seen it before?
Nope. This was a first time for me. Like, I'd heard of it, but I didn't know that much about it.
Right.
But this is one of his lesser known films because what had happened was you had Moby, you had African Queen in the 50s and Moby Dick, and then
some little known films.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
These little movies,
and then you had it's like Sinful Davy, uh-huh. A Walk with Love and Death, Reflections in a Golden Eye, and these movies were sort of like weren't the big things.
The first two you just mentioned, I've never heard of.
Yeah, right,
exactly. Reflections on a Golden Eye, I have heard of.
But this is part of it where it's like, has he lost his touch or whatever? And then does Fat City.
Many years later.
Many years. He does Fat City in 72. Sinful Davy was like 69.
Maltese Falcon was 50s, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maltese Falcon. Asphalt Jungle was in the 50s. And Maltese Falcon was actually 41.
Oh, 41. Jeez.
Yeah, that's right. Across the Pacific in 42. Key Largo 48. I mean, so he had this string of like, African Queen 51, Moulin Rouge, of these giant
just
movies.
Movies that are benchmarks,
yeah.
Right.
In film. Like if you say the title and people just know what mm-hmm. you're talking about. I had not seen this, so that was one of the reasons I wanted to see it. And Stacey Keach was there doing the conversation.
Oh, wow.
So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And, Stacey Keach is not a young man anymore.
Mm-mm.
He had apparently just had knee surgery like a few weeks earlier. So he just came in, But he was, yeah, he looked good. Interesting talk, just, you know.
Now, what it does, the Man Chinese, does it also do the Egyptian? The
Man,
festival
Man
over?
Chinese and the entire Chinese, all of the theaters.
Right. Six ones up
the
there.
Six. Mm-hmm. Then they do the Egyptian theater. They do the pool at the Roosevelt.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then they use the Ricardo Montalban Theater for interviews. Like, they'll interview somebody for a couple of hours. They'll have like a 2 hours on, and then so, you know, you down to the Montalban Theater. Last year, they, you know, I saw Sophia Loren interviewed down there. Her son interviewed her, which was really interesting because he's a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And this year, they Faye Dunaway was, and I didn't get it because there was something else I wanted to see. So I didn't
see. Can't see everything.
No, you have to pick and choose.
So what did you see after that?
Well, on Friday night, you know, I mentioned to you a movie I've been wanting to see forever because I love the weird ones.
Mm-hmm.
Roar.
Oh, yeah.
This movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is the midnight film on Friday night.
That's a good midnight film.
It is a great midnight film. And it's Tippi Hedren and her husband.
Who basically own lions.
They own a, and now it's still there, and it's in sort of just north of LA in the valley. They have a sanctuary, an animal sanctuary for lions, big cats, and other animals. But this is like 1978 or whatever. So the movie was, the premise of the film was, her husband plays a guy who's an animal. He's a wildlife conservationist. Right. He's trying to protect lions and from hunting in Africa and whatever. And he's living in a house in Africa, and he's keeping lions and tigers and cougars and leopards, like all sorts of different wild cats, which are not supposed to be together. It's already a problem territorially. And so he's living in this house with them, and there's 100 of them or something, like 60 of them. And of course, the premise is he's invited the family to come visit the wife and kids. So they're all going to have, you know, a great time a week in this house living with all these cats. And it's insane because they're wild animals. And so they tend to attack people. So it's really fascinating to watch this movie, it's a narrative film, but it actually plays a lot like
a documentary
because you're actually seeing people mauled by lions. You can tell everybody in the film, you can see that they're acting, but you can see the fear in their eyes the entire time. Like, they're in fear for their lives constantly.
Because they did get hurt during the filming of this.
Jan de Bont was the DP, the director of photography and the cinematographer on this. And he had to go to the hospital to have his scalp reattached.
Well, that's weird. You'd think working with wild predators that one purpose is to thin out the food chain would be...
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. And there's a scene where literally Tippi Hedren's husband, Noel Marshall is his name. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where the lion just chomps on his hand and... He just starts bleeding like a stuck pig.
Oh, yeah.
And he wraps it with, and he's still acting the entire time. He's acting, he's wrapping his hand up with a torn shirt.
Oh my God.
And the whole movie is like this. It's just them being chased. When the family arrives and the father's somewhere else, something else is happening. He's chasing like poachers, guys who are threatening to kill the cats and
save the family.
Right. Yeah.
Melanie Griffin is in it.
Melanie Griffith is the daughter. She's like 20 in this.
Right.
Because it's Tippi Hedren's her mom. And the entire movie, it's just them being chased through the house. It's like 40 minutes. So they're just being chased through the house from room to room. And they're all screaming and they're terrified.
And you know it's not CG animals.
No, it's the real thing. It's like 1979. And these people are just—they're just being chased through the house by wild animals. It's really insane. So it's really worth seeing if you like completely out of control movies that clearly, like the point was to protect these animals, but the entire time they're just being chased by them because they're basically food.
And Noel Marshall directed it and has one directing credit.
Yep.
And he's also an actor in Roar as Hank, and then produced a couple films. It was an EP on The Exorcist, which, you know, it's probably like, you know, Wow, The Exorcist was amazing. Yeah, you get to direct. What do you want to direct? We'll just have real lions chasing people around a house.
Sure, it'll be we'll teach
this
people.
This is my
how.
Dream project.
It was, yeah. And that's the thing about it. It was a total dream project because to this day, Tippi Hedren still has this sanctuary up there, and she runs it. You know, and up in
any
in
of the
valley.
Same animals still up there.
That's a good question. I don't know if they lived long enough.
Yeah, do they live to be 100?
30 or yeah, they're 50 years old. I don't know that. Someone call in and give us the heads up on that.
Yeah, what's the life expectancy of a stage lion?
Yeah,
and you know, get it. They're all rescue lions from zoos and circuses and stuff. I mean, so
they're already angry.
Yeah, their heart was in the right place. I get it, but they just
angry stage lions.
What could go wrong?
Yeah,
sure. They're all well adjusted.
Yeah,
it's not like they were poked and prodded by humans before.
Yeah,
but like looking through this schedule here, there's so many good things that were in this film. Like Network was in it, which is one of my favorite films.
I saw that Sunday night.
Oh, what
and
was
Faye,
that?
And Faye Dunaway with conversation with her.
What was that? Oh, she seems a little nuts.
Well, you know what? The first impression I got was she's really smart. She's a really intelligent human being. Like she knows her craft. She's not an idiot. She's smart. I have heard that as well. I did not, like I said, I didn't see the 2-hour interview. That would have been fascinating, I think. But I didn't talk to anybody who had seen it. So, but she didn't come across as insane. She just came across as really, really smart. Like she really knows her craft. And so that was kind of interesting.
That movie, I don't know of a movie that has, you want to know why we're in this, you know, reality TV.
That's a blueprint. Watch that movie.
Watch that movie. Yeah. It has predicted.
It's so prophetic.
Everything, right. Man. It's unbelievable.
It's totally prophetic.
Now,
who could have known?
And it's
It's amazing. Like, now, give us an idea of like kind of the feel of the festival, like the vibe of it.
It's just a few thousand people who just love movies.
Right.
Thousands of people who just love film and they appreciate it. So everyone's really. They're all really respectful. It's nice that you sit in the theater and people don't want to
run their mouths.
Right.
Everyone's quiet.
During the conversations, of course, if people are taking pictures, they want to film. So and you get that. That's fine. But yeah, they're
phones
all there.
Are off.
They're quiet. And of course, you know, the TCM really runs. This is one of the nicest, best run festivals because everyone's there to see film and they appreciate it. And they're all very careful. Turn off your phone, you know.
Right.
They're very specific. The only screen you should be looking at is this one up here. You know, that's
right.
The kind of stuff they do in front of every screen.
And none of the filmmakers are trying to get distribution?
No.
No. It's not cans. It's not
not like what we're going to be doing in San Francisco.
Exactly.
Right. We just did, actually.
Exactly. Because these are movies that people are already there to see. They love them. And they're film lovers. There's all, you know, they're cinephiles.
What a great vibe. I mean, you know what? We gotta go next year. We keep saying it every year. Stuff comes up. It's always at a weird time for us. We always got stuff going on. But next year, for sure, we're going.
Yeah.
You guys, it's totally worth it. It's awesome. I mean, like I said, it's one of my favorite things to do ever. And here's one of the reasons. Saturday at noon, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
No, I love that.
Carl Reiner in conversation.
What was that like?
Wow.
He's 94 years old.
Wow.
Think about a guy who's been in the business 70 years.
Wow. Right.
It's like he and Mel Brooks 5 or 6 nights a week, they hang out together and watch TV. And Mel Brooks falls asleep sometimes. It's like stuff like those are the great stories. It's like he and Mel still hang out like all week, like almost every day they hang out. I mean, you're talking about the guy, Carl Reiner, created the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Right.
If you're wondering if he's still working, he just published a book like that week.
Oh, my God.
It's about creating the Dick Van Dyke Show. Mm-hmm. And he was doing a book signing after. He did a conversation before.
He's 94.
And then he did a book signing after. Yeah, and he's 94 years old. And still pretty sharp. I mean, he jokes about forgetting things, which you're 94. I think you're allowed. Yeah. But he's totally sharp.
If you leave the house at 94, it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. He's walking without assistance.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's the kind of thing where, and I hadn't seen Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. I haven't seen it in 20 years.
Oh, right? I haven't seen it, forever.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
It's funnier too if you know the films that it references, like that it pulls.
Right. And now seeing it, this, like when I first saw it, I didn't.
Right. Me either.
You know, like knew of them. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it now, it's infinitely more enriching now to watch, and funnier. Like it's funnier now than it was. So
I want to talk about that film because of the for me, it was probably for all of us. It came out in 1982. So yeah. I was like, whatever, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I was just a Steve Martin fan.
Me too.
I just thought he was like, had all his albums, loved him on Saturday Night Live.
Me too. Absolutely.
I didn't get what the movie was really about and all the old films.
I mean,
stuff.
Right. I kind of knew those old films because I'd watch them on TV late at night. There'd always be, you know, black and white films on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I was just going to go see anything Steve Martin did. You know, at any point.
Yeah,
and,
me too. I think I had the same attitude, I think, at that time.
The Jerk had come out.
Yeah.
He was in
1979.
Jerk came out in 79, which was great. Pennies from Heaven, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's a musical. And then Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid was so, it was so unique and so different because it was a, you know, they obviously people had done comedies of film noir before, parodies, but the way that they did that and
the way that they integrated it into the old film footage,
that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And Steve Martin played it straight. Like, he was always the big over-the-top guy, which is what you loved about him, but he played it straight.
Just totally as straight, noir, PI, mm-hmm. Private Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, I remember just being sort of mesmerized by it and understood that I didn't get a lot of it.
Right.
But thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Going like, wow, this is really over my head.
Yeah.
You know, like, right. Yeah, me too.
And it's funny how it sort of was that era of the comedies in the late 70s and early 80s and how this was so different. You know, there were so many different ones, like Blues Brothers was so different at the time.
Yeah, at the time it was,
you know, Pennies from Heaven was so different. The Muppet movie was like so different.
And also when you look at a movie like Blues Brothers and you see like all of the garbage movies that Saturday Night Live churns out, like based on sketches, where Blues Brothers was a completely different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was based on characters from Saturday Night Live, but it was an actual movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, well, I think it had a little benefit of the fact that instead of just being a bit, I mean, it was they were a musical act.
Yes.
Too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you could still create more. You're creating a story that's completely, you're just writing a script.
Right.
An original script, and mm-hmm. you don't have to try to pigeonhole some guy who sits in a copy room.
Right.
Two guys who go to a club.
Yeah.
So that was a highlight of the weekend for me, seeing that again. And Carl Reiner, it's totally incredible.
What else did he, anything else that he stood in his Q&A that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, he was talking about Mel Brooks, and we got to talk about, he talked about, Dick Van Dyke, and you know, they still talk, and Dick Van Dyke is also 90, I think, and also still spry. I saw him on stage somewhere. He did a musical number.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like he's still – and he's – if you want someone to do computer animation, really great computer animation, call Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke does computer animation?
He taught himself.
To
computer animation.
Wow.
So he does full-blown – yeah. He knows how to do computer animation because he just taught himself.
That's insane.
The guy's a Renaissance man. It's amazing. But he talked about the Dick Van Dyke Show a lot, and you know, Mary Tyler Moore, and just, you know, it's crazy. The guy's career is just ridiculous. And he talked a little bit about, you know, his son Rob. So you know, and you know, his films.
Did he refer to him as Meathead?
Strangely, no. Ironically, I thought he might. But just fascinating, you know, just to listen to him talk about the old days with him and Mel, and the 2,000-year-old man he talked about and how they, you know, did a number of those. It was like the first, one of the first comedy albums ever.
Well, yeah.
I think. And like nobody had ever put comedy on a record. I think Red Fox was the first guy to do it, and then I think Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks might have been close second. because a 2,000-year-old man was like 1950-something. Yeah, it was just, you know, crazy stuff. It just, you know, he's a pioneer in it, like, all across the board, practically. Yeah, so it was, yeah, amazing to see that.
What else did you see?
Elliot Gould was there.
Oh, wow, weekend. Really?
I saw the conversation with him. Alec Baldwin interviewed Elliot Gould.
What movie was he?
I went to see, right after that talk, The Long Goodbye.
Yeah.
1973. I had never seen that. Mm-hmm. It's been on my Netflix queue for
ever. Robert Altman film.
Yeah. And I've been wanting to see it. And so this was a great time to choose to see that. And they did, of course, another conversation with him beforehand. I know a lot of people like are really weirded out. They don't like it because of they take a modern approach. They said he's Philip Marlowe, but they said it in 1973. Mm-hmm. So it's current. So there's, you know, he lives in Hollywood. In the film, Marlowe lives in this really amazing, I'd love to find it. I think I know where the apartment is. But the apartment, it goes up an elevator, and the apartment next to it is, there's like five naked women just live there. Like young actresses, and they're all into yoga. Yeah, yeah, 1973, and they're all doing yoga. And they're just like constantly naked.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's violence, it's bloody, you know, it's a contemporary noir, and I think a lot of people didn't like it because they felt like it took the whole Philip Marlowe out of the context of the 50s.
It's a Raymond Chandler novel,
right.
And it was interesting because that is also, now Elliot Gould stars as the lead, and that was another thing. I think at the time people were like, "Oh, he shouldn't be doing that." You know, there was that sort of like he wasn't the right Philip Marlowe type.
Right.
And, you know, he had done MASH in 1970.
Right. When that screened Sunday morning with him talking, which I wanted to see, but I just couldn't. I did like 14 hours 2 days in a row. So it was like, so Sunday morning I woke up, I was like, oh, I could not. If I go to a theater, I won't make it.
Fall asleep.
So yeah. I had to sleep in.
What was Elliot Gould in his interview? What was like sort of his take on the reaction to The Long Goodbye at the time?
Yeah, he said, you know, because Alec was like, yeah, some people love this. And Elliot was like, some people hated it. You know, he understood that. But, you know, he's Robert Altman. He wanted to work with Robert Altman, and Altman. He said Robert Altman says, Elliot, you are this character. Like Altman totally believed in. Like he was like, you're the only person I want to play this.
Right.
And so you trust your director. you go with it, and so you know he enjoyed it, but and he loved doing it, and wouldn't have done it any other way, but the faith of Robert Altman, you know.
Now, do people like are these talks? Do people like ask questions? Do they open it up to the fans?
There are some Q&As.
Yeah,
depending on how much time they have, but they usually, and so it's usually only a couple or three or four questions,
right?
Tops. But yeah, some people ask questions. Sometimes I feel like a lot of people ask questions that have already kind of been
right.
Well, if you were listening. or, you know, not everybody gets to see the interviews either. So if you didn't see Alec Baldwin interview him, you might not see it. But yeah, you usually get at least three or four questions. Yeah. Hmm. You spend more time on the actual conversation with whoever's interviewing them, whether it's Ben Mankiewicz, who's like everyone loves and does great interviews. Mm-hmm. But Alec Baldwin, I like Alec Baldwin's interviews. Mm-hmm. I think he has an interesting perspective because he's an actor.
Right. So he's asking, he understands the whole everything, the business, being on the set and all of that. So that's going to motivate his questions.
Yeah. And he has, you know, relations. Sometimes they've worked with the same directors or you know, and so they can share anecdotal information so it can kind of be more informed. So I like Alec Baldwin's take on it. And he has a podcast, apparently, that I didn't know. So, good. I think apparently...
when celebrities do podcasts, they don't always commit to it for years.
No, true enough. Apparently, Alec Gould was a bit of a gambler.
Yeah.
There was really?
A bit of a conversation. Not anymore.
Oh.
Because apparently it was... Yeah, he said, I eventually had to for obvious reasons, he said I had to stop.
Oh wow.
he liked to gamble.
Mm. About that, didn't know that about him.
Didn't know Ellie Gould had a little taste.
Yeah,
what was his game? Did he say
blackjack,
cards?
Dice.
He was into cards. He was definitely a poker and blackjack. Mm. So
what else did you see?
That was right then. I saw, here's a movie I never saw before. Because I wanted to mix this weekend up as every possible thing I could do, as varied as possible. I saw Band of Outsiders.
What's that like?
It's good, but it's, you know, it's French, early 60s, isn't it?
It's like 64. Alice in Wonderland meets Kafka.
Yeah, kind of, and it's
weird.
And there's,
you like the weird ones.
I do, and it was, I enjoyed it, and it's also got at least one scene that people tend to know. It's where it's these two small-time crooks, and they meet this girl, and she lives in a house with her aunt and uncle, and they have money stashed away. Mm-hmm. So these guys sort of as a lark joins them in plotting to steal the money in the house. And
Jean-Luc Godard, by the way.
Yeah, Jean-Luc Godard. Oh,
okay.
And this is the French title is Band Apart, which is Quentin Tarantino's
production. It's one of the reasons he named it. Yeah, this is one of his favorites. And so one of the scenes is the three of them, before they plan the heist, they go to the Louvre and to see, because apparently there was like a record of some guy who ran through the Louvre the fastest, and so the three of them try to see how fast they can run through the Louvre, and apparently it's a sort of a famous scene. You see them running through every room of the Louvre. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a dance scene. There's a little number they do, and they go to a cafe, put some music on, and the three of them do this little dance, and it's kind of where I think Tarantino took, you know, the Uma Thurman dance. Uma Thurman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason I kind of wanted to see the connection to whatever, you know, pop culture references, because I'd never seen
Tarantino specifically.
Yeah. And I had never seen it, so it was one of the things I wanted to do. It's a foreign film, French, and it's good. I liked it, but you know, it's very much a product of its time. Mm-hmm. But it was an experience I haven't had before, so I wanted to see that. And Anna Karina was there, the girl in the film. She was there doing the Q&A. And she became, shortly after that, a filmmaker on her own right. So,
because that movie came out in 64.
Yeah. So she became a director after that. So that was kind of interesting.
And what was your favorite part as we wrap up? What was your favorite part of the festival? I know you had how many? Three full days?
Yeah, a lot of
book signings, screenings, talks. What was it? What stood out the most? Top moment, Neil, go.
Top moment.
Poolside Batman. Hit it. What was it?
Yeah, wow. You know what? It might have been Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, though. Right. That was really cool. Long Goodbye was really, I mean, I really enjoyed the Long Goodbye. I really liked that film. I liked it a lot, actually. And I think Roar. I can't pick one.
It's hard to
It's
hard to pick one.
But you probably, in terms of
Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid is up there, though.
Because you got the Carl Reiner talking.
Carl Reiner and seeing Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid with really a whole new perspective, you know, seeing it and enjoying it that much more, knowing all the references.
There were so many movies in this year's TCM festival that were just like resonated with my childhood a little bit when I'm looking at the like Brian song.
Well, here's one I know you'd be, I mean, you'll probably can't believe I didn't see, but they had the greatest surf movie of
Endless
all time.
Summer.
With the director there.
Oh, man.
Doing a conversation.
That's fantastic.
So,
oh, The Big Sleep.
It's the kind of thing where like, I'm sorry, Graham. I'm so sorry. I know you feel less of me now for not experiencing that.
I've seen that movie actually on the big screen a couple of times. I've
never seen it.
It's fantastic. But it's very, it's dated in the sense that we're spoiled now in terms of specific surf footage, because now we can put a camera in the wave. We can put a guy, we can put GoPros on people, we can put guys inside the wave, so you get this amazing footage. But it is the classic, because it is it's the 60s surf scene, and it's they go around the world and they meet a lot of unique people, and it's the
surf film by all other surf films are judged.
It started it was the thing that like blew up surfing in the 60s in terms of that. So
this is a great program too.
The program is
like, there's like great, like I'm reading like Forbidden Planet 1956 and it says that the robot Robbie was a complex assemblage of electrical parts costing about $125,000.
That's crazy.
Which is outrageous.
So much money
in 1956
then.
Yeah,
56.
Well, that's the thing that's so cool is why Turner Classic does such a great job is they just the detail on the research on everything, and it is they know who their audience is, film fans who want to learn those little pieces of information. And
that was a screening I wanted to do to see, but it was something, you know, it was on, I think on Saturday when I was seeing something else, and Greg Proops introduced it. He was the one who did a little conversation, and apparently Robbie the Robot came out on stage.
Oh wow!
Like the actual Robbie the Robot.
Oh,
still
that's
exists.
Great.
So that was one I wanted to see, but that's something I had to miss. Yeah, you know, because I love Greg Proops; is great. So, yeah, that's the thing. That there's so much. Like, literally, there are six theaters simultaneously
right.
every day.
Right.
And they're just – everything's staggered.
Sure.
And you do. You have to just go, all right.
Gotta make some tough choices.
super tough choices. Like, really tough. Well, the toughest – I mean, it wasn't tough at first, but, you know, doing the – seeing the Carl Reiner and Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid at noon – same time in another theater at the Chinese, they were doing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, God. How do you pick?
Not a problem because there was no guest for Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh.
And then the night before, by the way, we've just added Christopher Lloyd and Danny DeVito are going to be there to come do a conversation. And then now I'm like, come on. Like, it was a no-brainer to see Carl Reiner. And then it was just like, oh, man. So that was one of the times also where I thought it would pull people from one theater to another.
Right.
But the Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid was still full. And ultimately, I was like, Carl Reiner's 94. I'm going to see, you know, that was like, I just made that decision. So, but those are the kind of things that happen. You never know what they're going to do. The next day, someone's going to be like, oh, by the way, someone has decided to come and talk. And
wow.
Like, no.
Elliot Gould introed MASH, too.
Yeah, he did on MASH on Sunday, which I just missed. It was at 9 o'clock. I mean, I got home from the midnight movie Saturday, GOG, which was a great cheesy 50s movie, but it was a great restoration of 3D, and it was spectacular. It was gorgeous. It was one of the most beautiful 3D restorations I've ever seen. Really cheesy 50s sci-fi movie. But you know, I get home at 2:30 in the morning, and you want me to be in the theater at 9 the next morning. You have to get in line at least an hour before. So I'm getting like 3 hours of sleep, and you want me to be in line again? Saturday morning, I was just like, I can't do it. I mean, I wanted to so bad, but it was just too much. It was too hard to do.
Well, that's cool.
So, but yeah, it's this festival is amazing, and Turner Classic Movies, they run it beautifully. It's solid, you know.
It's great to hear about every year. It's such a cool thing. I'm so glad it happens.
It's one of my favorite things.
You love living in LA for.
Yeah, when I'm there, I'm like, this is why I moved. I lived here. This is why I'm here.
Yeah,
this is great. I'm looking at Roar right now. The description and the first line is: "The family adventure has been dubbed the most dangerous movie ever made."
Yep. Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for going there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're all going next
Ain't
year.
Ain't nothing like that. Sure. Press pass is like one of the. It's, you know, when I get it in my hands, I'm like, yay!
We say this every year, but we got to like.
We got to plan it out.
Well, we got to reach out to the festival.
Yeah.
Because I think we could get more involved with this festival.
Yeah, I think so too.
If we really reach out to them and say, hey, this is what we do, we cover it every year. Mm. You know, we talk about it. We have writers go. Like, we want to come. I'd love to introduce a film. Like, let us get involved more.
Yeah,
that would be fun.
We'll set this up much earlier next time.
And clearly, some of their volunteers know us already.
Well, that's so another reason.
That's
like, they
nice.
Know us.
Well, there's a couple of people over there that run it know us as well. Yeah. That they've interviewed. I remember when they interviewed Alan Havey and Greg Proops. They asked them questions about our book.
Cool.
You know, another chapter.
Right. Well, and with Greg Proops in it, you know, he's got his hands
he's already
very
over
much
there.
Over there.
Yeah.
So, All right, next year for sure. Well, right. That was a you know, thanks for filling us in on what was going on.
Time there.
Sounds like it was really, really cool as always. The Turner Classic Movie Film Festival, it happens around the same time every year, kind of end of April, beginning of May. So make your plans now.
Yes. And if we're not making or editing a documentary,
yeah, we will be there.
We'll try to go.
Yet another one.
Or just any film.
Yes.
We're not doing that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Neil, where can people find you on the World Wide Web?
Film Nerd Neil on Twitter, or Wickley on Twitter, Wychlea. Neil T. Weekly on the Facebook thing.
And of course, your and movie reviews CFN, on comedyfilmnerds.com.
Comedy Film Nerds. Yes. And don't forget those. I'm really enjoying the weekly film news.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I scrape around for some really interesting stories. I like to find the weird ones, and some of the dumb ones are really excellent. I like finding some of the
It's been
dumb
great.
Stories.
And your commentary on them has been hilarious as well.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy doing that.
It's cool. And all you guys listening, we love your interaction and your comments to the weekly news and the posts and all that stuff.
Fun.
We've been doing more of the fan feedback stuff. It's been really cool to hear you guys. So, and of course, we'll see all of you at hopefully a Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 23rd through the 25th.
Indeed.
More lineup, you know, all the coupon codes for the live stream and everything that's happening. So go to lapodfest.com to get your tickets. And they're going quick. They're going faster than they've ever gone. So
lapodfest.com.
lapodfest.com. All right, guys. Thank you, Neil. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And also want to mention, too, we'll be back next week with a regular topical episode.
Sure.
Mm. And we will talk to you then. Thanks a lot. And remember, Han shot first. Roll.